and welcome to the program. I'm Pavla Horáková and we start with the news. Both the coalition Christian Democrats and the opposition Civic Democrats have said that they consider Prime Minister Stanislav Gross's Saturday public apology as insufficient. Mr. Gross's Social Democrats, on the contrary, welcomed the apology as an end to tensions within the ruling coalition. Prime Minister Stanislav Gross officially apologized on Saturday for giving rise to a political row by some of his ill-advised statements in connection with the controversy over the way he financed his apartment. In a live address to the nation in Czech television's evening news program, Prime Minister Gross also announced his wife was going to terminate all her business activities in order to put an end to the current political crisis. Mr. Gross has been under fire for several weeks because of his failure to provide a plausible explanation of how he financed a Prague apartment 5 years ago and how his wife funds her business. Earlier on Saturday, Prime Minister Gross said he considered the government crisis triggered by the controversies surrounding his family's private finances to be over and called on his cabinet to get back to work. In a confidence vote on Saturday morning, his party gave Mr. Gross the strong backing following weeks of crisis of confidence focusing on him personally. In 3 weeks' time, Prime Minister Gross, who is the acting head of the Social Democrats, will seek election as party chairman at the Social Democrats National Congress. The Czech National Library said it is interested in acquiring a 14th century manuscript which is on offer at a Paris auction room. The 24-page parchment book is a fragment of a Latin translation of the Chronicle of Dalimil, the oldest Czech-language chronicle in verse and one of the fundamental documents of Czech historiography. The Latin translation is believed to have been made in Italy in the second half of the 14th century. The Czech National Library is in talks with the Culture Ministry over a financial contribution by the state towards buying the manuscript. The catalogue price of the artifact is between 120,000 and 150,000 euros, but according to experts, its final price could climb up to 1 million euros at the auction. Horem Pádem, or Up and Down in English, has won the Czech Lion Award for the best Czech film of 2004. The film, directed by Jan Hřebejk and produced by Ondřej Trojan, won a total of 4 prizes at Saturday's award ceremony in Prague for best Czech film, best director, best script and best actress in a leading role. And finally, a quick look at the weather. The skies should remain overcast on Monday with daytime temperatures hovering around 0 degrees Celsius. The rest of the week should be partly cloudy, but snow showers are expected to continue throughout the week. Daytime temperatures should not exceed 3 degrees Celsius. I'm Pavla Horáková and that's the end of the news.
Dobrý den, you're listening to Radio Prague. I'm Rosie Johnston. Is the Czech government crisis at last dying down? It's full steam ahead for a train warning against the dangers of drugs. And today's talking point is Karol Wojtyla, otherwise known as Pope John Paul II, and the way he's seen in the Czech Republic. Stay tuned for this and more.
Chtěl bych se vám omluvit za vysvětlování svých osobních záležitostí, která mohla v některých případech...
The Czech Prime Minister Stanislav Gross there, voicing a public apology to the nation for a scandal over his private finances that threatened to bring down the entire cabinet. Following weeks of internal discord, the three parties in the Czech governing coalition called a temporary ceasefire which would enable the cabinet to continue functioning. However, commentators say that this row is far from over and predict a tough battle ahead for Europe's youngest government leader. Daniela Lazareva has been following the story. Daniela, only last week it seemed like the cabinet was on the brink of collapse. Has the Prime Minister really survived the crisis?
Well, Rosie, that's not at all certain. The Prime Minister says he survived it. After giving the nation a rather lukewarm apology on Saturday for mishandling the apartment row, as he put it, he said he considered the matter closed and called on his ministers to get back to work. But in actual fact, very little has changed. Certainly, the Prime Minister received overwhelming support from his party's leadership at a party gathering on Saturday, bolstering his position. But the Christian Democrats, one of the three parties in government who have now backtracked on their demands that the Prime Minister should resign, say that they're only giving the Social Democrats some breathing space to resolve the problem. They want the Social Democrats to ditch Mr. Gross at the party's national conference at the end of March and have more or less made it clear that they will mount a new offensive if he remains in office after that date.
If one of the three parties in government doesn't find the PM trustworthy, then how capable is this cabinet of working?
Well, it's clear even now that this row has weakened it severely and will continue to do so. The Prime Minister says it's time to get back to work, but in the coming weeks he himself will have to focus on gaining as much support as he can in view of the coming party conference. The Christian Democrats' allegiance is uncertain, and the leading opposition party, the Civic Democrats, have said that they plan to initiate a vote of no confidence in the Gross government in Parliament. So there are plenty of battles ahead for Mr. Gross, and it seems that he will spend the next few months in office just fighting to remain there. Many commentators believe that the only reason why the government has not yet collapsed is the low standing of all three coalition party in opinion polls and their own survival instincts. On the other hand, the opposition Civic Democrats lead opinion polls by a wide margin, and they're now very much in a position of strength. They may let the coalition government stew in its own juice for a while and lose more public support in the process, or they may opt to test the solidarity of the coalition government with a no-confidence vote in Parliament and try to bring about early elections.
The President has criticised the coalition truce, hasn't he?
Yes, Mr. Klaus has been openly critical, saying that the problem had not been resolved, merely put on hold, and he seems particularly concerned about the effect that this will have on the public. The public is, as you can imagine, sick and tired of watching these political skirmishes that just never seem to reach any satisfactory conclusion, and there are fears that this disgust with politics may affect voter turnout in the next general elections.
Thanks, Daniela. A new project to discourage young people from taking drugs has been announced in the Czech Republic. Organisers are convinced that despite the 30 million crown price tag, the revolution train will have a strong impact on preventing drug abuse. Kate Barrett has more.
When Britain's Prince Harry was discovered using marijuana in 2002, his father responded by taking the young prince to a drug rehabilitation centre. He wanted Harry to see the ugliness and realities of drug abuse up close. Here in the Czech Republic, a new drug prevention project applies a similar philosophy. But instead of walking into a rehabilitation centre, young people hop on board a train. Pavel Tuma is heading the project.
The train is made up of 8 carriages which will travel throughout the Czech Republic. We expect about 900,000 children to visit the train over a period of 2 years. What is revolutionary about it is that we are trying to engage all of the visitors' 5 senses. That is to say that we are trying to affect the visitor not only through what they see and hear, but also through smells and tastes.
Each carriage of the train contains multimedia presentations which play on the senses. Visitors will step through deserted, dirty rooms littered with needles. They'll experience temperature changes and smell a drug addict's room. These sensory experiences are intended to leave a deep impression that will be triggered later when making decisions about whether or not to use drugs. But not everyone is enthusiastic about the project. Tomáš Foritek is the director of the anti-drug music festival Modré dny, or Blue Days.
Mám pochybnosti o tom, aby to mělo ten správný dopad na ty děti a pořadatelé počítají s tím, že...
I have doubts about the effect of this project on children. The organizers are counting on getting a high number of visitors and that people will be interested in it. But in my view, this is impossible to guarantee. Nothing shows us that the effects will be positive. Moreover, it doesn't take into account that the children could react very badly.
But the organisers have a long-term vision for the project and are working to promote the idea both in Canada and the United States. Otto Jelinek, a former Canadian cabinet minister, is helping to raise the 30 million crowns. That's over $1,300,000 needed for the project, a price he says is ultimately small.
That's a very small investment for drug prevention. It comes out to about 40 crowns per child in this country, which isn't very much. So the amount of money being spent is very minimal in comparison to the benefits that we are convinced will materialize as a result.
When I asked Jiří Komoros, the head of the anti-drug department of the Czech police force, whether he thought this anti-drug plan would work, he said he wasn't sure.
That's a difficult question, but I think it has a good chance of appealing to people. They may not refuse drugs in the end, but it will at least make them think about the problem.
Kate Albert there with that report.
The Czech National Library is setting its sights on an unprecedented prize, a surviving fragment of a translation in Latin of the famous Chronicle of Dalimil, one of the earliest Czech language chronicles dating back to the 14th century. For three generations, the parchment, featuring rich illuminations and text, lay forgotten in a dusty bottom drawer, before being rediscovered by its owners, a prominent Parisian family that has now put it up for auction. The bidding begins at around $200,000, but has already been estimated that the Czech National Library may have to bid well over $1 million to earn the right to bring the manuscript home. Is it worth it? Earlier, Jan Wellinger spoke to the National Library's Zdeněk Uhlíř to find out.
The manuscript that appeared in Paris is a very important fragment for the Czech national heritage. It's so far unknown Latin translation of the Czech Chronicle of Dalimil. During the 20th century, there was no similar discovery. This manuscript is so far unknown.
Who might have commissioned this translation into Latin?
It's a difficult question, but I suppose that it could be Czech King John of Luxembourg or young Charles IV during the 14th century.
Much of its history is shrouded in mystery. It's turned up in Paris several generations in this one family, but before that we really don't know much about it, where it was all those years.
We don't know how the Paris family acquired the manuscript, but doesn't matter because of high importance.
And let me ask you this. What do we know about what kind of condition the manuscript is in?
The manuscript is in quite good condition. It's a fragment of 12 leaves, several full-page illuminations, and it contains a Latin translation of 6 chapters.
And do you know specifically which stories are contained?
The story of Svatopluk, Bořivoj, Saint Ludmila, Saint Wenceslas, and last, the story of Czech war with Polish prince in 1040.
And now for this week's sport, as ever, with Ian Willoughby.
We've got a packed sports news for you today, starting with athletics. And Czech decathlete Roman Schreiber has taken gold in the heptathlon at the World Indoor Athletics Championships in Madrid. Schreiber said before the event he wasn't in ideal form, and he considered dropping out after picking up a back injury on the first day. But the Olympic champion fought on, edging ahead of Alexander Pogorelov of Russia in the final event, the 1,000 metres.
Neběželo se mi to úplně super, hlavně poslední kolo, což je asi normální, takže hlavně abych do toho dal úplně...
The race didn't go perfectly for me.
especially the last lap, which I suppose is normal. The main thing was, I gave it my all. I didn't want to come second and to have regrets afterwards. I'm completely whacked. But I won again.
Roman Cheberle in Madrid, where he was the only Czech to take a medal. High jumper Jaroslav Baba was dissatisfied with fourth place, but triple jumper Sharka Kasparkova was delighted to come fourth, the former world champion producing her best jump in 6 years. In skiing, it was another good weekend in what's been a great season for the Czech Republic, with cross-country skier Lukáš Bauer coming first in the 15-kilometer free at Lahti, Finland on Sunday. The third World Cup win of his career lifted Bauer into ninth place in the overall standings.
Last year I finished 11th overall, which included sprints. This season I'd like to improve on that, because after my terrible start to this season, that would be an absolutely brilliant result.
Lukáš Bauer, after his success in Finland. Katerina Neumanova also did very well in cross-country skiing, coming second in the 10-kilometer free. She's third overall in the World Cup. Ice hockey and the Extraliga playoffs are now in full swing. Sparta Prague were humiliated 5-1 by Vítkovice in their opening game, but won their second clash 5-4 to make it 1-1 on matches. Reigning champions Hamez Lín, meanwhile, are tied 1-1 with Litvinov. Slavia are 1-0 against Liberec after their opening game on Sunday, while Pardubice beat Kladno in their opening game. Moving on now to tennis, and the Czech Republic suffered an absolute whitewash in their Davis Cup tie against Argentina at the Buenos Aires Lawn Tennis Club at the weekend. A Czech team of Novak, Berdych, Zieb and Hrnčík were beaten 5-love by the Argentinians, and for the third time in a row will face playoffs to remain in the elite world group. That's all the sport we have time for today, but you will find more stories at the Radio Prague website.
You're listening to Radio Prague, where it's now time for Talking Point, this week with Martin Mikulay, taking a look at the Pope's popularity amongst Czechs.
Ke čti nejsvětejšej trojice prohlášujeme skutečnou platností svátymi blahoslaveného Jana Sarkandra.
What you are hearing is Pope John Paul II speaking Czech during the canonization of two Czech historical figures, Jan Sarkander and Zdislava of Lemberg, 10 years ago in the town of Olomouc. Pope John Paul II is a respected figure worldwide, even though he is often criticized for his conservative stances in questions like abortion, contraception, or gay marriages, he still enjoys a great popularity that can be hardly compared to his predecessors. One factor contributing to his general popularity has been his energetic image, as well as the enormous number of trips he has made around the globe. John Paul II is also popular in the generally non-religious Czech Republic, even though the reasons for his popularity here may be slightly different. As Martin Horálek from the Czech Bishops Conference says, it is associated with the fact that Pope comes from Central Europe and still identifies with the region.
Certainly this Pope had a very special sensitivity for the whole Eastern Europe, for the Slavonic countries, and also for the communistic and post-communistic society at all. And you can imagine if the Pope was from the Italy or from France, it's still slightly a different view. So I think certainly this is one of the biggest role of John Paul II, that the whole Christian Europe start to think much more about the whole, let's say, east of Europe.
But John Paul II did not appeal only to Catholics in Eastern Europe. As former Czech dissident Jan Urban says, due to his resistance to communism, he has also been important for the many non-religious people.
You know, just the symbolism of the first Slavic pope with very strong anti-communist standing and what was important at that time in Czechoslovakia, anti-Soviet standing. This was encouragement for non-Catholics as well.
His election in 1978 not only encouraged the Polish dissident movement, but also Czech dissidents who united around the Human Rights Manifesto, Charter 77.
One has to remember that his election came in that very dark time after Charter 77 came to existence and the regime reacted with vicious attacks. And also that a very strong element of Charter 77 dissident movement was Catholic or Christian Democratic later on, as they call themselves. So the news about Polish Pope came as a great surprise, first of all, but then as a tremendous encouragement.
Many of the dissidents believed that John Paul II would have the power to influence totalitarian regimes in Eastern Europe.
I recall talking to known Catholic activist Václav Benda at that time after his release from prison, and he laughed in the darkest of dark times, claiming, you know, this is the end. And I thought, you know, you are dreaming, you know, what are you talking about? It's okay, it's Polish Pope, it's wonderful. We heard it from our Polish friends, you know, how important it is for them when we met with them at the border in the mountains. They all had stickers and literature about him, but still it felt like a dream.
But Martin Horálek says that the election of John Paul II came as a great surprise even within the Catholic Church itself.
It was certainly a huge surprise. I think that the most of the people in Italy, in Rome, they didn't expect it. And he certainly opened the church to the very live dialogue, to the contemporary society. He opened the church also to the Eastern Europe. He started dialogue with the Orthodox Church. And what is also very, very important, then John Paul II opened a very positive dialogue with the Jews and with the Muslims, what was his papacy something pretty suspicious and unusual in Vatican.
Prior to 1989, the relationship between Czechoslovakia and Vatican was not good. Not only during communism, but even before the war, there was a long dispute regarding John Hus. Hus was a medieval religious reformer, a theoretician of the Czech Protestant movement, the Hussites. He was condemned by the church as a heretic and burned at the stake in 1415. As Martin Horálek says, it was only after the fall of communism that these disputes were settled, thanks to John Paul II.
He came directly after the Velvet Revolution in 1990. And he put this visit as a very extraordinary visit, what was something very, very special. And he opened the whole big chapter about the John Hus and all this big question about this period in the Czech history. So he practically starts the 4 year process when the historians and theologians and a lot of specialists studied this question about John Hus and about all this period.
But even though John Paul II is very popular among Czech Catholics and his role in hastening the fall of communism are widely recognized among former dissidents, not all Czechs look at his stances with sympathy.
I don't agree with his opinions regarding abortions and condoms and so on.
No, já musím říct, že jsem vlastně ateistického vyznání, což znamená, že v tom křesťanství.
Well, I have to say I am an atheist, so I'm not very qualified in Christianity, but I know that the Pope is a certain symbol and he can achieve many things if he wants. I can imagine that this figure makes sense for many believers.
Osoba má nějaký smysl.
Problém katolické církve aspoň pro mě je v tom.
The problem of the Catholic Church, at least for me, is that it's too closed and it doesn't reflect current society. I mean, for example, the often discussed question of family planning. In this I see unnecessary conservatism and little respect for the needs of the current society.
At the moment, there is much speculation about who will come after John Paul II. Many Czech Catholics would like to see Czech Cardinal Miloslav Vlk in the post. But even if, as seems highly improbable, the next pope were to be from Central Europe, it probably would do little to change most Czechs' rather skeptical attitude towards not just the Catholic Church, but organized religion in general.
Was Martin Mikulay with Talking Point, which marks the end of today's programme. If you've any comments or reactions, we'd love to hear them, so please write to us at English Section, Radio Prague, 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic. You can also email us at english@radio.cz, and don't forget our website, www.radio.cz. So for now, from me, Rosie Johnston, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thanks for listening and goodbye.